Hello, good morning, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Yes, we are live right now, flip-flopping the program that I do with Kevin on Tuesdays to the end of the program as I am running for a 10 o'clock shotgun tee time for men's opening day. And what a day we have, right? The Masters weekend, one of the events we all remember from our childhood. Except now it's so different. I think about this every year, I think now, you know, it's just, it's one of those things where you, the world stopped for about 2.5 hours as the leaders got to the back nine on Sunday. That's all you ever got to see was the back nine. You only got to see that on Saturday and Sunday. And now you can watch holes 4, 5, and 6. You can watch this lead group. It's just streams all the time. You want to watch it over and over and over again. It's pretty amazing how that's changed over the years. But the tradition and the focus on the Masters and how beautiful it is, it hasn't. It still is the tournament in the world that people watch. It's amazing. What a tradition, and how great Augusta National has done at protecting that in a world of private planes and TV shows about the professionals, right? Anyway, it's interesting. Times change. Times change. All right, so a rough week, right? Market didn't do so good. And how about that correction that never seems to come? Is it here finally? Are we going to have a 5% correction, a 10%? Do we get to have a bear market because we're actually slipping into a recession or something? Does this one look like the one of, you know, I remember this in 1996? They all look different. And nobody knows. This is it. Always feels like this is it. How many this is it's have we had? Over and over and over again, right? As Wall Street told you, the prices were too high. Price-to-earnings ratios were too high. Inflation was too high. Rising interest rates, you can't own tech stocks. It just the list of you can't do this goes on and on and on. And it's not just picking on Wall Street analysts or what have you. It's symptomatic of this general jump-on-the-trend mentality. It's like, Why don't we move to gold right now? It looks like it's doing really good. Yeah, okay, you can. You can buy something at its all-time high and, you know, hope it just goes higher because it doesn't produce anything. What about Bitcoin? I don't know. What about it? You know, and my answer often isn't just meaning to be flip. It's like, okay, we want to buy gold. Okay. What does gold do? Nothing. Absolutely. But it's a store of wealth. Okay. Why? Well, I don't know, because that's what the guy, gold guy, told me. It's a store of wealth. It's the only real asset. Oh, okay. So that guy's bank account over there isn't real. The stock market at all times highs, not real. Well, then you take inflation out, and then you go, oh, you don't take inflation out of gold? Yeah, well, when you do, over the last 40 years, gold has lost money. Oh. But I thought it was a real store of wealth. The only one. You see, there isn't really any place to, quotes, hide. Corrections happen all the time. Gold goes up, it goes down. But if it's not producing something the way stocks produce dividends, what is the point? What is the point of it? You know, to what end? When do we flip back to the fiat currency? What? Yeah, because you can't actually go spend gold anywhere. Oh, well, that doesn't sound like the only real thing. It sounds like another thing, like a piece of copper. But copper's actually used. And frankly, copper's up a lot more than gold is. Lots of things are. Lots and lots and lots of things. But people don't go, you know, you need to be buying the only real asset there is. Copper. Oh. Okay. But you see, copper's actually used. And so the fact that if the economy is doing okay or we need more electricity, which we do, copper's one of those things that's super conductive. So we use a lot. A lot. And then they have to go get more, and the price goes up. I guess my point is not to go buy copper. But why we fixate on certain items, I don't understand. Or why we worry about corrections that are inevitable and certain to occur all the days of our life. But we do. And then we hyperventilate when they occur, which is weird, but we do. Oh, that was certain to occur. And breathlessly, it's, well, how much lower do you think we'll go? Let's get our next analyst in here. Let's get our next guest in here. What do you think? Is this the bottom? What can you buy? What are you owning now? When do interest rates turn? When's the Fed do this or that? One after the other, all day long. And so then, with that parade of people predicting, of course, whatever direction the market's going, they predict it's going to go further that way. If the market's good, they keep predicting it's going to be good. They'll say things like, well, we're cautiously optimistic, which means nothing. It means we can say we were cautious, or we can say we were optimistic. Perfect. I'm cautiously optimistic that the market will continue to do exactly what it's doing. Thank you for stating that the sky is blue. Thank you. That's super duper helpful. But they aren't wrong now, are they? Because they were smart and cautiously optimistic. So people are, it's a funny, weird thing that we go through in trying to predict things. And it's a very human thing. And it's a very wrong thing because people aren't right. Well, you know, but so-and-so, no, so-and-so wasn't right. The market timing Hall of Fame is empty. There's nobody in it. There's nobody in it. Warren Buffett, greatest investor of a lifetime, 70 years doing this, doesn't time the market. John Templeton, Michael Price, Peter Lynch, none of them time it. We all know who they are. We just don't know Sammy Super Timer Smith that timed the markets for 40 years. Rarely missing a turn. It's not possible, but we keep doing it. We keep asking the analysts. We keep asking the Federal Reserve where interest rates are going to be. And they're like so wrong, it's not even possible to be that wrong. It's literally not possible to be that wrong, except that they are. There's no way you could tell people, well, we control interest rates and we're going to raise them 3 quarter point increases, and then instead you do 18 quarter point increases in a year. I don't know how you can be that wrong. Honestly, you don't. You can't make this up. And then the following year, everybody, they're kind of indicating and everybody's kind of following that they're going to start towards the end of the year, we'll start dropping interest rates. No, we're not going to do that. We're rolling into this year, and it doesn't even look like June's going to get a interest rate cut. And then the analysts tell you this is going to happen, and that's going to happen. So people are looking for a correction that doesn't seem to come. So what should you do? I mean, is it okay to have some cash? Of course it is, because cash now, as long as you take the step of getting it out of the bank, going out and buying a money market account, and or, you know, whatever, daily interest is your favorite thing, U.S. government floating rate notes, whatever, you can do those in an ETF, exchange-traded fund, all those things, okay? Because they're earning five. So can you do that and not be like a market timer? I think so. Market timing is this in my mind, and I kind of circle this around, and we're going to talk about the inevitable correction, okay? Because corrections are inevitable. And honestly, I'll probably say this multiple times in today's program, that my prediction is that we will have another one. There will be a correction. In fact, the next correction is just around the corner. But I don't know how long the street is. Nobody does. Nobody does. I mean, it's just like nobody ever does. We say we're overdue for a correction because guess what? We have, on average, three market corrections of 5% or more per year. Actually, I think the number is something like 3.4. I'm not, you know, that's the average. You can't have a 0.4 correction. You either have one or you don't. But that's what our mind goes to. The average. We haven't had three in a year in a couple years. I think we had one last year, maybe. I'd have to look at the notes. It's all right. You get the point. We've had zero so far this year and one. Sometimes there's like 14 in a year because it goes down. Maybe it goes back up 1%, then goes down another 4%. You know what I'm saying? It's just that's markets. That's what they do. And then we have 10% corrections about once every 16 months. Okay. So are we overdue for that? Or is it okay? Are we right on track? Does it really matter? No, because that average is comprised of, hey, it happened three times in 1 year. My goodness, it happened a bunch of times in another year. And it hasn't happened for 2 years in a row. That's what happens sometimes. So you see the timing or the severity, or it looks like this, or we're about to have a recession, so the market's going to take. Not all the time. Market doesn't always go down in a recession. Huh. So how do you know when a correction's coming? You don't. But, I mean, come on. I mean, it's like, aren't there some indications of it? No, not at all. They come during recessions. They come before recessions. They come after recessions. They come when there's no recession. And what's the difference really between a 5% and a 10%? Well, you say, well, it's 5, you idiot. I get it. Okay. But my point is that we say a 5% correction is anything up to a 9.9% correction. So if it's 9.5 or it's 10.1, that's kind of the same, but they're not. They're in the severity category that's way different. Again, these are things that we banter about as if there's some kind of uniqueness of a 10% correction versus a 9% correction. A bear market that's at 20% versus one that's isn't a bear market because it's 19. We have arbitrary numbers that can be right next to each other. A recession, or I should say a non-recession of 0.1% growth sure feels a lot like a recession. And it looks like a lot like a recession. Like people are having trouble finding jobs. They're really having a struggle making ends meet. It's the same. It's like a 0.1, half a percent difference. It doesn't make a difference, and we put so much weight on it. And we put a lot of weight on it because what we can do is we can sound really smart if I can give you a history lesson, okay? And what I mean by history lesson is like, this is how often we have a 5% correction or a 10% correction or a bear market. And how long they last, how severe they are. And these are all based on averages that mean nothing. You see, sometimes a bull market has lasted over 12 years. Oh, but the average is only supposed to be 4.4 or whatever. Some of them have lasted way less than a year. What is that? Like, oh, well, we're overdue for a 12-year one versus a less than 1 year one? Because of our linear brains, then we think that way, like everything's the same. And they're not. And so whenever we move above this line of like the market being at 16 times earnings is its normal place, we're way overvalued and overdue for a correction that may not come for 2 or 3 years and 1,000 or more points. Which is exactly what we went through. Super helpful. And so when we say it's absolutely certain to occur, it's more of a preparation, not a prediction. It's a preparation for that's what we have to prepare for. And so I've got to take a break here, but we're going to talk about preparing for the inevitable, because that's what we have to do. It will happen. Let's not react to it after it happens. How about we prepare for something that's certain to occur? Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. That is our number. We'd love to hear from you, and also, if you prefer email, it's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. So talking about corrections, right, and it's, you know, one of my favorite charts to look at and reflect, right, is the, you know, kind of since modern times, since the 60s, more modern times, I guess, whenever the market's down 25%, because that's when you just are just drooling or you're terrified. Most people are terrified. They don't perceive that as a once per decade-ish opportunity. It's terrifying because you get sometimes into periods like 2007 towards the and then through the beginning of 2009, which had four different 25% drops. Now, if you're doing the math at home, that usually would be like minus 100%. That's not the case. Obviously, the math doesn't quite work that linear. But it was also accompanied by a time that was really very, very frightening, and that was when we were afraid the whole system was going to somehow collapse, right? Trying all kinds of new things. QE 1, 2, 3, problems in Europe, and all those things. It was really a rough banking crisis. But the four times, because, and the reason I say you're just like, wow, because the returns after those periods are amazing. And that's the part we sometimes forget when we're caught in the middle of it. It's like, these things work. The market goes up 10% all the days of our life over long periods of time. It just does. And your requirement to do it is nothing. It just works. Okay? But we love the action of it, I guess. The commentary, because it makes us feel really smart, smarter than most people, because most people don't even know what a stock and a bond is. Don't know. Don't care. They just, like, don't. They have a block to understanding anything finance. And for them, it doesn't, the world allows them to exist. It's kind of interesting, and it does, because there's such abundance, and we don't notice that. Oh, those people, they just don't understand finance. Well, they can. It's not like you have to have a high IQ. In fact, I would actually argue that the more simple your thought process is, and I don't mean like you don't think, because I think common sense is like genius. And in our world today, common sense is like, did you know that Joe has common sense? What? Hire him now. Pay him $1 million a year. We got to keep that guy. There's nobody in this whole place that has any common sense. That's how uncommon common sense is. So, but we all know it, right? It's like, we know it. So we're not talking, I'm talking about if you just have common sense and you just look at things and slow down and take your time. It's like, this is not hard to understand. You buy and own the great corporations of the world. Well, what does that mean? You own stock, and here's the definition of stock. Here's the definition of bonds. Here's what the S&P 500 is. Do you need to be able to calculate it? Do you need to really understand that it's a market cap weighted index? No. You just know, hey, that's what I buy. That's it over there. And a cup of coffee a day, $5 a day, is in fact worth $1.1 million. $1.1 million. Never put more in over a 40-year period. That's it. That's what you need to know. Oh, okay. So you don't have to follow CNBC. You don't have to figure out that the market is going up and down or when the next correction is. None of that is necessary. But you have to prepare for them. And preparing is like two things. Oh, I know one's coming. So I will not worry about it when it happens. I'm going to enjoy if I get a big one, a big correction. Because, the returns after those are amazing. They're unbelievable. Unbelievable. And once in a while that happens. It may not happen this decade or even the next one. But once in a while we get a big, big sell-off, a big scary one. But the other years are typically full, and not every year looks the same, are full of 3% and 5% and 10% corrections that suddenly get everybody breathing hard. And then we have to cover the market, right? We got to cover it into the evening. CNBC's special report. The market is down 5%. What do you do now? What are you going to do? Tune in tonight. We're going to have all of our experts lining up to scare the socks off of you. And make sure your eyeballs are viewing us for the next few days. Tune in. Why would you tune in? What I'm saying is that doesn't help. It hurts, but we are drawn to, it'd be like, okay, the airplane's going down. Instead of asking the pilot, why don't you react and do what you best you do? Why don't you let it go ahead and keep going down? Why don't you pull out a manual and start thinking about it? Why don't you ask the folks, you know, back in the passenger aisles what they think we should do? Why don't you just chit-chat, you know, with some people on the radio? Yeah, we're in free fall here. A couple of lights blinking at us here. And, you know, what do you guys think? Boom. Instead, just relax. Hey, let's relax. This is going to happen. It will happen over and over again. So we first of all prepare, like, mentally to say, this is totally normal. And what are we doing in a practical way? When markets hit all-time highs, if you need money out over the next few years, you should be having it out. It's a happy thing. You made lots of money in the market. It's good. We're at all-time highs, and you're going to take the money out anyway. Don't wait until the day you need to take it. It's fine. Oh, we're going to buy a new car, so here's $30,000. Let's pull it out. And it's even easier today because you're getting paid 5% on totally safe money. Five. It's not zero. It was zero a couple years ago. Isn't that crazy? It was literally zero. And then for 12 years before that, it just stayed there at zero. Different world. Requires different things. So as we look at it, it's like it's okay if you're going to need money. Number two, if you want to let some of the interest and dividends, not a market timing decision because I'm not going in and selling, just let that build up a little bit so that when an inevitable correction occurs, and this is going to be part two after my next break here, you have some cash available to buy when the market hands you a correction. That's okay too. Because you're still fully invested with all of your capital. Now we're just getting dividends, interest, if you own some bonds, boom. Or here's the preface to the next segment. Some of your things are moving around differently, aren't they? Some things are maybe even up while the market's down. Some are not down none or very little, and the market's down. And some things are down way more than, quotes, the market. So what do we do about that? All right, well, you already know, I got to take a break. We got Fox News, and it's 580-KIDO. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us, 580-KIDO. Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. If you miss anything, we've got podcasts at our website, PetsoFinancial.com. We've also got YouTube where we just kind of record our Zoom meetings we do for clients. Just did one yesterday, as a matter of fact. And for those of you that tried to get in and couldn't, I think it's capped at 100 people, it will be out early next week on YouTube. And it was fun to do. We talked about corrections. Talk about what we're talking about now. Now, when we are prepared right, for a correction. We are not anticipating it. We're ready when it comes. We know it could be 3 months away, 3 days away. It could be 3 years away. We just can't know. And none of them look like anything else. This is why it's so important to understand averages don't matter. I mean, it's interesting to say, for example, they matter. And sometimes when I say, you know, the market's down 25%, so what's the average return over the next couple of years? Okay. But that is also full of, guess what? Over the next 1 year, they're not all positive. Sometimes 25 leads to another 15, okay? It does. It doesn't say, oh, at 25 we stop. It just says most of the time, the vast majority of those losses, the correction is done. And then we move higher and the market goes up a lot. Most of the time. Not all of the time. And it's the same thing with all these. Corrections last this long, that long. None of it matters. Some last a long time. Some last for just days. It's over. You can't plan that. But what you can do is be ready. And be ready meaning you've got a little bit of cash, we can move in, and we also are mentally prepared. We know it's going to happen. We're not running for the hills. We're not scared. We're looking for bargains. Now, here's the thing, though, too, that's really great when things are at all-time highs. Things are kind of calm, not a lot going on. Sometimes beneath the surface, though, individual companies that you would like are going through a tumultuous time. They are in a correction. They are having a hard time. They had a bad earnings announcement. One of their new drugs didn't work out as well as they'd hoped. So even with the market at all-time highs, maybe you have an opportunity there. Maybe when energy wasn't moving anywhere, nobody was talking about it, and although they were very, very, very profitable and paid great dividends, they weren't being bid up. In fact, relative to the market, they were doing terribly. And so you could actually allocate money to that area post a correction. You see, markets are thought of as monolithic things. I think we can't help ourselves on some of this, right? You really have to think about it. The market is not the market. Now, if you buy an S&P 500, you know, a spider, SPTM, something like that, that measures basically the whole market, right? And the whole S&P or something like it. Then, yeah, you're all in. You got a bunch of really crummy performers. You got a bunch of sky-high ones. It all evens out, and you've got the S&P, okay? But most people have lots of other things. Like they've got a bond fund over here. They've got, you know, some real estate. And I don't just mean you decided you wanted to buy another job and so you bought a house called a rental. I got my hands full of my own house. This is a strategy I do not understand. But at any rate, that another story. And so we go and it's like real estate that is traded on the, like stocks in real estate companies, okay? They don't work the same as Google and Amazon. In fact, Google and Amazon don't work the same. They're in a lot of the same buckets, so they all have a tendency to kind of sort of perform general direction-wise. But how's Apple doing compared to Facebook? It's not the same. It's not doing well. How was Facebook a couple years ago doing against any of the quotes Magnificent Seven or Fab Five, Four, Three, whatever, because we got to have cool names for things. All these things change all the time. But we think of it as the market, and it's not. It's a market of individual companies, and it's a market of creative destruction. Some things are going well, some things are going poorly. And when we look within our own portfolios, this is the danger of it. I really study it. I really look at it. I look at close all the time. I know I have a neighbor who spends so much time, but that's okay because he does a great job because he studies it. I'm like, okay, great. glad he thinks he's good at it. Because I'm sure that's what he's told you, is how good at it he is. But we don't find that to be true, actually. So that's okay. The more you look, the worse you do. It's just a statistical fact. Now, you may be one of those humans that, well, honestly, like me, I can look and look and look all day. Doesn't really infect me, I think, is better than saying affect me. I can look and I can see things on the screen because I've done this for so long that it's actually helpful to see things. Oh, real estate's been not doing so good lately. You can see that on the screen. Not deep studying, just there it is in your face. And then somebody that continues to feed you information, which is really great about some of these financial firms, breaks down the sectors, tells you exactly what's going on. So you're not making it up in your mind, by the way, which is an easy thing to do. And so when you have this market that says it's down 15%, as an example, many, many, many things are down 30% more. Many things. Many sectors are. And some are down 5%. Pretty much none of them are down 15%. And so within this market's down, some things are down a lot. They're in a full-blown bear market. Not a correction. Others haven't even entered correction mode. And the game of guessing who's coming back and doing this begins. The chatter is amazing. Well, this sector's that. This is good. This is bad. We're staying on board. We really liked high tech. And it goes on and on. And remember, you're prepared for the certain correction coming. So what do you do? Anytime in the market may not even be in a correction mode, but you've been looking for an opportunity to add to some positions you don't have a lot of. Maybe a sector you don't. Something you want to diversify into. Boom. They have a correction, not the market. So we want to think of this not monolithically. You don't need to study it. These things hit you in the face. You can't miss it. It doesn't have to be studied. You don't have to look too hard. In fact, the harder you look, the more you see things you really that aren't helpful at all, honestly. And also, when we're looking, be careful of this. When you look at your portfolio and you wonder things like, how come the market's up? I hear it's doing really, really well, and I'm not. I'm not doing that well. Why? What should I do? What's wrong? Well, the answer is you probably aren't the market, right? You aren't just owning the S&P 500, which is what we call the market. Because maybe you're taking income, so your portfolio would look very little like the S&P 500 would. You're not going to have it chock full of non-dividend paying stocks when you're in an income mode. You may own a few, but you don't own enough to keep up with the soaring stock market. So we always have to understand what it is we're trying to do with our portfolios. And understand this too. If Warren Buffett has 10 good investment decisions, great investment decisions, that account for the vast majority of all the returns over a 70-year, nobody's touched it, in how great a returns it is, 10. And you look at your portfolio and go, I can't believe that I bought fill in the blank. I don't know why my fill in the blank doesn't ever seem to go anywhere. And you find constantly what's wrong with your portfolio. And then you will go through, and instead of saying, well, it's diversified, and someday this area will do better, and that area will do better, there's nothing wrong with going through and going, you know, this guy is a dog. I don't want to own General Motors anymore. This is crazy. Why am I owning this thing? They never do anything right. Okay, good. Good decision. But that's a fundamental decision. Not, wow, it just isn't doing as good compared to Apple. They're not the same. It's human tendency, but it's wrong. That's just the way I am. Fine, but then you got to not look. Because all you're doing is just changing all the time because things work, then they don't, then they do, and then they don't. And then you end up selling Apple in a period that isn't doing any good and missing the 70x it has returned since inventing the iPhone. 70. I always say 40. I went and did the math again. It's 70 times since they invented the iPhone. And we could see the prototype. They were building them, getting ready for the launch date. Here it is. Here's how it works. When you can stand in line and get ready, because we're in June, we're going to go ahead and start selling them, because right now we're making them. 70 times. But you left it because why? Because it wasn't performing as well as your other stuff. That's the danger. It really is. It's very dangerous because you got to have the apples. You got to have the home runs to cover up the ones that inevitably most of our choices, Warren Buffett's words, most of my choices were mediocre at best. Woo! Greatest investor of all time. Mediocre at best most of the time. Kind of, sort of, that's good enough for me. That's a good understanding. All right, final break upcoming for this hour. 580-KIDO. Hello, welcome, and thank you again for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO is our number. You know, it's interesting when I think about how many predictions in a year are just so far off and dangerous, but we just roll on and ask the same people the same thing. Yeah, not really just picking on people, but it's comical because in so many ways you see a Jim Cramer, an L. Arian, who, you know, L. Arian, I'm not sure what he's been right about, like, ever, but he's on all the time. I mean, all the time. It's one of those things where we get there's like this persona of an individual. And don't get me wrong, Kramer's, you know, and holds a lot of little facts in his head. It's unfortunate because he's so emotional and wrong. But, you know, he's not necessarily trying to predict the market, but he can't help himself, so he does it. And here's a little secret. If he's really depressed about the market, buy, buy, buy. Really, I mean it. I cannot tell you how strong an indicator that is. It's just a really good one. It really is. I don't think that there's any index watching thing that I've ever seen be more right than that. Or the opposite, unfortunately, is true too. We're going to get a little bit of a correction if he gets real optimistic. Listen, we want to be prepared for corrections. I'm just going to wrap it with this. We got to be prepared mentally. They're inevitable, certain to occur over and over again all the days of our lives. And they're not predictable. They occur all kinds of times when we don't have an inverted yield curve. Or we do, and then we don't get a correction. They sometimes happen before a recession, sometimes in recession, sometimes after recessions, sometimes nowhere near a recession. There isn't, and they don't have a duration time. They can be short, they can be long. Just like bear markets. We don't have to know that, and we just have to mentally prepare. And also, as your dividends and your interest rates build up, hey, that's fine. You have opportunities to swing assets over there. That's the beauty of corrections. It gives us an opportunity to buy the greatest companies in the world at great discounts. That's how portfolios can really explode in the future. And most importantly, nothing wrong with pulling money off the table when you're going to need it. And I mean need it on your income, maybe over the next several years. Just don't react to markets. Plan for them. Know it's coming. And we'll talk to you next. Hello, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO, dave@petsofinancial.net, if you prefer an email. But that's going to be like right now, because We flip-flop today's programs because I'm running off to men's opening day here, 10 o'clock shotgun. So the Kevin Miller segment is playing here in about 15 minutes. Okay? Instead of the beginning at 8 o'clock, like usual. And if you missed the first hour, you missed a lot. So you're going to have to catch that on podcast. And that's at petsofinancial.com. It's also at your Apple Store, Google apps, all that stuff. We have a podcast. It takes us usually no longer than Monday at noon to have that downloaded. Okay? All right. Enough of that nonsense. Let's jump in because we've only got a few minutes to get all of this out. And I've got a lot of stuff. Okay? We talked about psychology. We talked about corrections. And I say psychology because if you notice how many times I mentioned in the first hour, preparation, mental preparation for inevitable things. It's actually required. It seems kind of silly, doesn't it? I know that the sun is going to come up tomorrow. I had better prepare. Okay, that might be something that happens so often we don't really prepare for it, okay? But when it comes to market corrections, especially for people in retirement, when you are in the midst of it, you've got your mountain of money that you have now retired with, okay? And it's moving up and down in value, and somehow you're supposed to pull income from it. That is psychologically devastating when it goes down. It just is. The first time is really hard. The second time is less hard. Third, fourth time, you're like, this happens. It comes back. It's okay. I get it now, okay? So that's why when we talk about getting mentally prepared, it's so that we don't make really bad decisions when we get emotional in those periods. And markets are not predictable. And this throws human beings completely off because when things are good and then they suddenly turn bad, I should have seen that coming. I knew I should have sold. I knew we were going to have a correction. I knew. No, you didn't. Okay, one more time, analogy. You're walking through the casino. The buffet is all the way at the back because they want you to walk through and maybe get enticed to come in and play some of the games. Okay? The roulette wheel's spinning around. And you look over and you go, in your mind, you don't say anything. 10. Bing, bong, boom, boom. As you're walking by, boom, it hits 10. Whoa! Honey, if I ever get a whisper from God, I'm going to run over with a $5 bill like that. I mean, I just knew 10 was going to go. Okay, what? But you don't remember because it's not extraordinary. It's just totally ordinary and happens over and over and over and over and over and over again. What is extraordinary is it fell on 10, but 10 happens to be your birthday, your anniversary day. It's your favorite number, whatever it is. It's the number you always bet on the roulette wheel. And it never hit the other 30 visits down the hall to the buffet. And you don't think about it. What you think about is the extraordinary. When it's remarkable, you are actually wrong or right. Because it is remarkable. We can't predict, so what we need to do is get in this sense of our caveman brain says, we are going to track food, so follow the tracks. Ugh, there's food. Boom. Very linear, very predictable. It is easily predicted. A predictable future is, though, if I follow those tracks, there will be an animal on the other side. Now, that's easy, and that's our caveman brain. I'm going to put my money in retirement into this thing that goes up and down in value but produces a cost of living adjusted income all the days of my life I can never outlive. Oh, wow, that's a little different because it's not predictable. You don't know what the valuations will be. Nobody's going, this is guaranteed to happen. It's always happened, but it's not guaranteed to happen. That's hard. And we still work on predicting or tuning in to the broadcast of predictors. Worse. What seems to have a major, major attraction to people is blood splattering news, including economic blood splattering news. I really, 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 really need to know more and more. From the Gold Bug Digest has not been right for 40 years. But man, it sounds smart. The end of the currency, the end of the dollar, the dollar's this. It's going to be absorbed by the Russian-Iranian Chinese superhero complex of new dollar per. Where is that thing anyway? I thought that was like 5 or 10 years old now. I thought the yuan was taking over. What? How come we're still trading those stupid, worthless dollars? How come we're not like trading gold nuggets across? You know, like I want a loaf of bread. Let's weigh out some gold. Why? And it comes and goes. It comes. And it's always in this, the darker it gets, the more looks we're going to get. Let's scare them to death. And they do. And we got the, you know, you don't want to be in the Wall Street casino. You got those annuity pimps out there all over the place, all the time. Super high commissions, but there's no fees. I can't believe we get to say this stuff. It's unbelievable. It's remarkable what we can get away with. And it is. It is remarkable. But when we allow all of those inputs and constantly seek them, which we do, come on, admit it. Go on. You clicked on to the guy over there that predicted the last whatever thermonuclear blast or whatever, right? You clicked on that. And then you went into Stanbury Research and then all the others and off into all these tentacles. Perfect. And now they know who they have. So you are fed constantly by the bots. And you, that's okay, because you are superhuman and you may rise above it and you make your investments in spite of it. You can have all the negative inputs in your life and you can walk away and be a happy camper because you are a superhuman dude. Whatever inputs you put into your brain, you are absolutely immune to it. That's what we tell ourselves, but we're not. Me included. You just don't go there. I don't know why I would spend my time. There's so much to do and to know and to read about. This healthy, thoughtful, insightful. That I'm not being pitched something by the same people that have predicted the end of the world my entire life. All they do is grab some modern headlines and keep predicting. Keep selling. They keep selling. So as we think about this and we're trying to get ourselves psychologically prepared, number one is know what your inputs are. Stay away. Stay away from doom and gloom radio. Doom and gloom TV. And the worst ever, the doom and gloom web. You know, it's easy to make fun of social media and all those things that you're not doing. You know, it's just kids. Just kids. And not understanding that you're being fed by bots, man. Just bots. They know where you're going. They feed it. They know who you are. And they feed it. They feed the need. I know it's not you, but it's the other human beings. And this is really important. So number one, watch your inputs. Careful. If you have a tendency not to be optimistic in a world that is as abundant as this one, I think you really need to work on that. Honestly, I do. I hope you do. It doesn't mean that God wired you optimistically. It means that this is something that you need to work on. It's not a put down. We just have to be aware. We have to be aware of our own bias. And optimism is not prevalent because it doesn't sell. But it seems to be working. That doesn't mean you don't prepare. As I'm saying, we prepare. We prepare emotionally. We prepare financially for inevitable corrections. That's not market timing. That's not seesawing. And it shouldn't absorb all of our thought. So watch your inputs. Really, really important in a world of super intense data. Super intense. You notice I didn't say knowledge. Knowledge is so far from the data flow. you really got to work at it to become knowledgeable, right? It's not data. And spitting out data is certainly not knowledge. That's just regurgitating junk. That's all it is. That's all it is. When we begin to understand that these things work over long periods of time, and they aren't predictable, they really are not, we carry a humility into our investments that is beyond just saying, you know, I really can't predict the market. It's a true, if you will, almost like bowing of the knee that I don't know. I can't know, so I must prepare for what I don't know, both emotionally and not. I am not superior in this. I'm inferior. And it's an important place to get to in investing. It really is. And just understanding the history of the ebbs and the flows, and there's long periods of time where this just doesn't work. But the majority of the time, it really works really well. And for longer than people think, for higher than people can imagine, more wealth has been created than ever imagined. I said this yesterday, and I actually got three emails that said, yeah, you know, you're exactly right. I have so much more money than I ever envisioned I would. Ever. And it's not the genius of switching stocks and mutual funds for them. That's not it at all. But it is the humility of not knowing, but holding and owning the great companies in something that works. Not knowing what it's going to be like in a year or two or three, but understanding the trajectory continues to be good. Great. Better than anything else. And when we have that and understand that there isn't any way to figure it out, when and what, we can finally breathe and be calm. And then we can have that kind of retirement where I never knew I would have this much money, this much abundance, and this much worry-free life. That's where I think we're all kind of sort of trying to get to, right? It's like, I can really enjoy this because I'm not fussing about it. There's enough to fuss about. We all have it. It's constant. Just turn on the radio. Boom, there it is. Bing. There's another alert on my phone. That's not an alert about something good, right? It's okay to have an alert that says, hey, guess who's ahead in the Masters, who won the Masters? Because then you got to put your phone aside if you're recording it, right? You got to be careful. But it's not when it's always bad news. We just got to be careful. We do. We really do. Our inputs are so important. And understanding the numbers, when we think 10% a year, which is what the market does, has your whole life, if you're 33, you're 83, you're 27, you're 51, it's 10. It's what it does. And that's comprised of never 10s. It just doesn't do 10 on a one-year basis. But that's what our linear brain does. So understand our brains are meant not to do this well. But there's so much information and so much knowledge, real knowledge available when we just take a breath. And we think of things on a 10,000-foot level instead of day-to-day. Don't get caught gambling in stocks and things. Don't do that. Don't do that. You don't chase from gold to Bitcoin to meme stocks to the general tech stocks. Don't do that. It's not how it works. Own the great corporations of the world. Control ourselves. Yes, corrections come and go, and they'll keep coming and going. And we'll just keep rolling with them. I hope you have a great weekend. Enjoy the next 40 minutes or so with Kevin Miller and I. And have a beautiful weekend. Enjoy. Thanks for tuning in.